is he, my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is Veronica Monet, your host of Shame Free Zone. Thanks for tuning in. We are going to have our guest a little bit late in the show tonight, 9:30. Rachel Kramer Bustle is going to be joining us. She's actually in an event right now, so she can't be here at the start of the show, but I'm going to warm things up by reading some portions from her book and telling you a little bit about her before we actually go on. Now, tonight's topic is a really important topic. It's about women's body image. And the brand new book is called Curvy Girls. And it's erotica for women. On the cover, I'm just going to describe the cover to you. You can look it up too if you happen to be online and you get a chance to look up Curvy Girls, erotica for women. It's edited by Rachel Kramer Bustle. And it's an anthology actually with a lot of different erotica written by a lot of different women who are working with their curves. Now, the cover of the book, I should say, shows a woman who has opulent curves all over the place. She's got a figure that some people would probably term heavy. And she is flaunting her stuff. I mean, she's just, it looks like she feels very, very comfortable in her body. And in a lot of ways, I think that is what we're going to be talking about, is what does it take for a woman to actually feel good about her body? I think for a lot of us, that's a difficult question to answer. You know, we may have a fantasy about what we would like our bodies to look like. I've not met the woman yet who's actually completely satisfied with her physicality. It seems like this state of criticism and a certain amount of anxiety, apprehension, it's universal, regardless of whether we're short, tall, fat, skinny, somewhere in between. It just seems like there's a lot of angst that women share about that. Now, I actually think that there's a tremendous loss of potential there. I think we spend so much time worrying about what we look like and dieting or trying not to diet or, you know, obsessing or competing or just looking at ourselves in the mirror that we lose so much of our potential and we lose the joy that we could be experiencing. To be living in our bodies instead of looking for ways to control our bodies. But anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what Rachel Kramer Bustle has to say about that. But let me tell you just a little bit about her. She's an author, an editor, a blogger. She's written for several publications, including the Huffington Post, a Salon, New York Post, San Francisco Chronicle, and she's also an editor at Penthouse Variations and a columnist for Sex Is magazine. She's edited about 40 anthologies, and like I said, this is a new anthology, Curvy Girls, Erotica for Women, and you can check that out online if you get a chance. She's got a website. It's www.rachelkramerbustle.com. Rachel is R-A-C-H-E-L. Kramer is K KRAMER, and Bussell is BUSSEL.com, RachelKramerBussell.com. She's based out of New York, and this new book is out of Steel Press, and she's also got another one called Dirty Girls, Erotica for Women, and she's the editor of the Best Sex Writing Series, which it's usually got, I think, a foreword or an introduction by Susie Bright. Susie Bright's a wonderful person. She's actually been a guest on my show before as well. Rachel Kramer Bussell has won quite a few awards here. We've got Iffy, just like Hippie, only an independent publisher awards. And she used to write for the Lusty Lady column, which was part of Village Voice, and also a columnist for Sexist Magazine. I also have a column on Sexist Magazine. That's sexismagazine.com. She's written for AVN, Bust, Curve, The Daily Beast, Frisky.com, Newsday, and Penthouse. So, she's got it. This is great. Her blog is cupcakestakethecake.blogspot.com. Okay, so I thought I'd read a little something from the introduction here for you. I guess it tells you a little bit about where Rachel's coming from when she brought this anthology together, which is, of course, the voices of a lot of different women. When I issued the call for submissions for Curvy Girls, I expected to see lots of stories about women like April Flores, bold, brash, out there, women who are proud to take up space, who are proud to lust and be lusted after, who took no prisoners in or out of the bedroom. I did get plenty of those, but what I also received en masse were stories where positive body image played a role. That state of mind was usually something the characters aspired to, and with the help of a lover, often acquired, more than something they started out with. So we're talking about a journey here. I shouldn't have been surprised. Part of my inspiration for Curvy Girls was my own experience as a woman, with some curves I like and others I like a little bit less. Some days I am eager to flaunt them all, and other days I'm all about Spanx and hiding my curves. I think a lot of us could probably relate to having those days. If nothing else, depending, even if you're thin, we tend to, as women, have that time of the month where things don't fit the way they do the rest of the month. Well, imagine we've all had that feeling. Back to the book here. To expect us to ignore a culture that tells us that thin, thinner, thinnest is desirable is unrealistic. So what you'll see reflected here is precisely that process of coming to terms with our curves, of standing naked in front of a mirror or a window or another person and stripping ourselves of all the preconceived notions we may have of what sexy is. Now, I have to say, and there's a comment here about this, I know that the culture tends to preach that thinner is better for women. But it's really interesting, if you look at women's magazines, that tends to be the message. And I think that's becoming less and less so because we've got now the athletic model. So I'm starting to notice that women are starting to get arms. Even the newscasters on CNN have arms now, where the look used to be about kind of having these little toothpick arms. And women are actually starting to have some muscle, which I think is awesome. I think it's healthy. But that overlay is still there. You pick up a fashion magazine, like you pick up something like Vogue or Cosmopolitan, everybody's just trying to get skinny, skinny, skinny. And if you look at men's magazines, what men actually look at to get turned on, aroused, it's very different body type. We're usually talking about women that have curves now. Maybe not as many curves as some of the women in this new anthology, Curvy Girls, but certainly a lot of curves. And it's very interesting. In the modeling industry, there are very distinct body types for the type of modeling that's done. So for the fashion industry, they're looking for somebody that's going to basically function as a clothes hanger and not interrupt the line of the dress. And that ends up establishing an ideal for women, which is incredibly anorexic and just has led to the modeling industry having to establish some standards about the type of models they're not going to allow now because they've had some models drop dead from being way too thin. It's not really a funny matter, but it's almost so sad and so tragic that it's funny. And, you know, that doesn't usually happen to centerfolds. They have enough curves that they're alive, they're well, they could probably have a period, maybe, you know, procreate, have a baby. So there's a different standard, and it's really sad to me that a lot of women will think that they're not attractive unless they can get thin. So that's something that we're talking about in this book, obviously. The women are thinking thin, thinner, thinnest. That's the cultural ideal. But I'm just wanting to point out that I think some of this is it's imposed by women, for women, about women. And it's really our subculture. It's the magazines we look at. It's the values that we share with each other that help to promote that. I think we have blamed men for this. We've held them responsible for it. I think maybe it's time for us to look around and see what men actually tend to be attracted to. Now, I don't know. We can hang the whole younger woman thing on them, maybe. But I'm not so sure this thinnest syndrome is something that's coming from the men. I think most men would like women to have a little bit of meat on their bum. So, back to this book. Here we go. Again, just for those of you who might be tuning in, I'm reading from Curvy Girl, Erotica for Women, and I'm reading the foreword by the editor and soon-to-be guest of our show, Rachel Kramer Russell. So she says, in a column that I wrote about body image and sexuality, I mentioned tying up a lover and blindfolding him, and I confessed I got to be in control, not only in the BDSM sense, but in control of my body. I didn't feel as vulnerable as I often do when I'm naked with a lover. That is the spirit I was looking for in this book. But the flip side is also present. Many of the characters here, like many real-life women, and probably like many of you, have struggled with their bodies in various ways that have affected their sexuality, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. Ultimately, Curvy Girls is a celebratory book, and one I hope will both arouse and educate. It's about discovering what it is we want in the bedroom and other locations just as much as it's about claiming those desires. In many of the stories you're about to read, women come to a place where they can be that bold, brash vixen who struts her stuff only after grappling with the underbelly, if you will, of being curvy. Take, for example, Teresa, who strips in front of her window for a voyeuristic neighbor in Arlette Brand's See and Be Seen. Another example is Maya in Nina Ray's Excuses. At first, Maya seems uncertain, not just about posing sexually for a sexy photographer, but also about how she will be perceived by him. Yet once she gets into her groove, she finds distinct power and arousal in taking it all off. I decide to up the stakes. I stand and undo my jeans. Despite my impatience, I pull them down slowly like I'm unwrapping a gift for him. Her body is a gift for her as well as for him. Aside from body image and exhibitionism, another category of stories I received focused on corsets. And why wouldn't they? These daring instruments, once worn out of social necessity, have made a voluntary comeback as women realize the instant curves a corset can provide. The man who seduces a barmaid dressed in the clothing of yore in Wenching by Justine Elliott speaks out for our disbelieving narrator exactly what he likes about her looks, think of all the words associated with a bit of extra flesh. Generous, ample, voluptuous, bountiful, beautiful, sensual words. Contrast them with their opposites. Mean, insufficient, meager, miserly. Other authors took the word curvy and played with it. Instead of Kim Kardashian's ass or plus-size model Crystal Ren's curvaceousness, they channeled athletes and butches. These stories made me realize that while curvy is often a euphemism for fat, a word that's been being reclaimed across the blogosphere and in real life, it can also be a way to describe women who don't fit the hourglass figure model, who embrace their shapes in different ways. As I write this, activist and plus-size provocateur, Nancy Upton, recently brought attention to the question of just what is sexy when she won, by popular vote, American Apparel's Next Big Thing modeling contest with a series of photos in which she posed erotically with a cherry pie in between her legs, for example, and while feasting on a whole chicken. The reaction to Upton's win and the outcry from American Apparel took away her title because she was obviously spoofing their concept of hotness. Shows that what we just don't need more plus-size models. We need more plus-size role models. I hope you'll find these stages some fictional ones who inspire you to become one. The women in Curvy Girls do live up to the title's promise, yet they are much more than just their curves. They are brave, nervous, curious, pregnant, hungry, kinky, sexy. They get tattoos, spankings, dessert, and satisfaction. They aren't easily pinned down or grouped together, just as real-life women of a certain size don't think or act alike. I hope you enjoy their adventures and the spirit of playfulness, risk-taking, and lust that fuels them. And again, that's Rachel Kramer, also doing the foreword to her book, Curvy Girls, Erotica for Women, which just came out. So speaking about it, she's actually going to be joining us now in about 8 to 10 minutes. But talking a little bit more about body image, it is something I actually talk about in my book, Sexy Groups of Escorts, where I address the idea that sexiness is not about a body type. And I think there has been a lot of confusion around that for women, and it certainly is in the media. We've got a lot of very rigid standards about what qualifies a woman to be beautiful or sexy or alluring. But as a lot of you know, I worked in the sex industry from 1989 to 2004, and I certainly learned a lot about the diversity of women who could do quite well as escorts. And it taught me a lot about, you know, if we're talking about sexiness and allure and sex appeal, then we are really talking about a communication that involves other people. And usually it's somebody that we're sexually interested in, or we're at least interested in a flirtation with them. If you're heterosexual, that might be a man. If you're a woman, if you're lesbian, it might be another woman. If you're bisexual, of course, who knows? I'm bisexual, so as we always say, that gives us twice as many options. But whatever your interest and whoever you're interested in attracting, if what you're thinking about is whether or not you're sexy, then it's, do you have appeal for somebody else? And there's a lot of diversity out there as far as what people find attractive. And not all men are the same. That's one of the things the sex industry really brought home for me, is that there's a lot of diversity with men. Men don't all want the same kind of woman. The only place where we see a lack of diversity really is in the modeling industry and in Hollywood. Hollywood and the modeling industry really have some very rigid ideas about what qualifies a woman to be sexy. But men, lay people don't necessarily ascribe to those things. Fortunately, they have tastes that are peculiar to them, and and for their own particular proclivities, they might be a little rigid. Some people do get a little rigid with that. They have kind of a type, but that doesn't mean that every man ascribes to a Barbie doll figure or a blonde even, you know. There might be some types that are more popular, but that doesn't mean that it's a universal. And it varies from country to country, continent to continent, socioeconomic category to socioeconomic category too. There's a lot of room for us to be exactly who we are in all of our beautiful diversity. I think the focus is well-placed when it's put on how you feel about yourself. Because if you feel good about yourself, if you think you're sexy, if you are enjoying your own sex appeal, you communicate that to other people. Other people can see that. They can feel that. That's actually what draws in a potential mate. It's not so much about what you look like as what you think you look like. If that makes sense. It's how you carry yourself. If you are confident, if you are joyful, if you walk into a room feeling like you're making an entrance, that's going to work for you. If you're apologizing, if you're really just focused on what it is you think is inadequate about yourself, you'll communicate that to people as well. And, you know, most people are very happy to make us right. So if you think there's something wrong with you, other people are probably going to agree with you. They probably are. So anyhow, I am really looking forward to getting Rachel on here so that she can tell us a little about the event that she just is coming from and how well her book is doing. And she'll be telling you how you can get the book. And we'll talk a little bit more about women and their body image, and how we can free ourselves from any negative stereotypes we have about ourselves. So hopefully we can be more creative and more productive and certainly happier people. That's what we all want. We're going to take a little break here in the shame-free zone, and when we come back in probably about 4 or 5 minutes, I'll be bringing with me Rachel Kramer Buffel. Okay, thanks.
Well, baby, gotta blow those clouds away with a smile upon your face. Darling, no one can take this day away, go. What were the words that he once whispered in my ear? Dear, don't have no fear, because I am right here, go. How long have you been walking since you've seen a friend? Now just say when, and then I'll come be running in. I gotta blow those clouds away. You gotta come on in, that day away. I gotta blow those clouds away. Oh, what happened to those days? Oh, those days, what happened to?
say what they want to say, but it's still our day. Yes, it's still our day. So, oh, oh, how long have you been walking since you've seen a friend? Now just say when, and then I'll come be running in. I gotta blow those clouds away. You gotta come on in, take that day away. I gotta blow those clouds away. Oh, what happened to those days? Those days would have been too. No, those days. What happened to those days? Those days would have been too. No, those days.
Hey, welcome back to the Shame Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, your host. And as promised, I have with me Rachel Kramer Bussell. And we're going to be talking about her new anthology, Curvy Girls, Erotica for Women, and also some of the issues that this brings to fore for women. Obviously, the book is not really meant to be issues-oriented so much as it's meant to turn you on, and hopefully your partner as well. But I am hoping that Rachel's going to give us some insight about some of the larger issues that this also brings to the fore for all of us as women, regardless of our size. Rachel, welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you.
You just finished an event. What city are you in right now?
I am in San Francisco, but I literally just finished an event about 5 minutes ago.
That's right, Bob. Yes. Your agent told me she can't join you until 9:30. So I'm sure that you have just been peppered with all kinds of requests to autograph books and answer questions, and I really want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on
the air.
Thank you.
This is actually the first time I'm talking to someone about Curvy Girls, and I'm really excited about it because it just came out, and I'm just starting to get people's feedback about it, and I'm really excited just to see it.
Fabulous. I'm very, you know, I don't know, you just did an interview for Joyce Lamb on USA Today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was interesting because I think it reached people who might not normally read some of the more kinky or dirty stuff that I edit or write, but because I saw that picked up on some romance blogs, and I think it's, you know, I think whether you're writing a romance short story or a novel or erotica, I mean, a lot of those things are similar, the things
yes.
that you want for a good story.
Absolutely, and I know they talked about Shades of Grey on, or 50 Shades of Grey, 50 Shades of Grey phenomena. But yeah, what I want to talk about is about some of your amazing writers for this anthology, and maybe, you know, I noticed, like I told you, I read the introduction to the listeners before you joined us, and you did talk about how you were expecting people to be maybe more brash, like April Flores, and some of the stories that you got were about the journey of finding what it meant to be sexy as a curvy girl.
They were, and I think, you know, at first that surprised me, but at the end of the day, I think it makes sense because a lot of women, and certainly myself included, have body image issues, and I think that sometimes we talk about it like as if, you know, one day you have body image issues and then the next day you don't and then you never do again. And then I think for a lot of people it's much more, you know, it varies, and maybe the things that they like about their body one day, they don't like about their body the next week or the next year. And, you know, I think it certainly changes with age and with, you know, whether, you know, how you're feeling about yourself. And for me, it's something that I grapple with, and I think it's very intimately connected with our sexuality and our self-confidence. So
when you were talking in the introduction, you mentioned, you know, having a Spanx day. And one of the things I shared with the listeners is who among us as women who couldn't relate to that, regardless of our size, because our bodies are constantly morphing, you know, thanks to our hormones. And, you know, it's any woman of any size is going to experience some bloating during her period. So I think the other thing that happens is our bodies are constantly changing, and of course pregnancy changes the body too. But as women, we don't have one body anyway.
That is true. And I think also it's interesting because sometimes I think we talk about body image as if the solution is, well, you know, if we're talking about straight women or women who date men, well, men like women of all sizes, so the end of the story, like just because someone else finds you attractive, you should find yourself attractive. And I think there is a connection, but I don't think it's as straightforward as that. And I know for myself, when I am really not feeling connected to my body, or just I don't like, you know, that I have a zit, or that I, you know, have gained weight, or I feel like I've gained weight, I mean, someone who's, you know, it could be like Brad Pitt telling me, you know, you look great, and I would just, you know, I mean, that would be nice, sure, but I don't think that you can believe that and feel that until you feel it yourself. I don't think it's about what other people are telling you necessarily.
I don't think it is either, and I actually, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that women have a different standard for beauty than men do. And men's magazines and women's fashion magazines don't have anything in common at all as far as the body type that's kind of held out as the ideal.
And I think it's interesting because women, I think we're much more critical of ourselves and we're much more critical of other women. I don't know if you saw this thing with Ashley Judd. I haven't read her piece yet, but apparently people were criticizing her because her face was puffy, and it turns out she's on some drugs that have, you know, made her face puffy, and people were really harshly criticizing her, and she, the gist of what she said, from what I read is, you know, you don't have the right to judge me, and I don't really care, you know, that you don't think I look as hot as I used to or whatever. And she also said that a lot of the people making those comments were women.
Oh, my. It was almost like they're, it's that competing, right?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. And also, you know, I think there is an element of if women feel like they're doing all these, you know, beauty regimens and whatever else to look a certain way, if other women aren't doing the same thing, then they feel like, oh, well, you're slacking off. You're not, you know, you're not keeping up. You're part of the agreement of what being a woman means in our society, as if that means one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also the idea that we should all look one way is kind of boring. I mean, imagine if we all, you know, were wearing exactly the same, you know, clothes or wearing the same jewelry. Like, I think people are interesting in and of themselves. And I also think, I do want to say that even though we are talking about curvy girls and, you know, women, I think women deal with more body image issues. Men certainly deal with plenty of body image issues, both around weight and around, you know, hair, height, you know, body shape. I think sometimes we forget that men also feel insecure about their bodies.
It's a good point, actually. And one of the things that is happening for men is that young men now are, you know, thanks to our media, are starting to develop eating disorders as a response to some of the advertising that they see. And I think they're also motivated to take more steroids and to work out obsessively in pursuit of this rock hard app thing.
And it's interesting. I've actually written a couple of stories that are definitely based, I mean, they're fiction, but they're based in my personal life because I know a lot of women do go for the, like, very fit, buff guy, but I actually really like big guys, fat guys, chubby, whatever you want to call it. So it's interesting because sometimes I'll be out with my friends and we have very different kinds of guys that we're drawn to. But I think the idea, men also face that idea that there's only one type of guy that you know, women are interested in. And I think, you know, in the gay community, there is more room for diversity. But I also think that it's a myth that, you know, straight men only want the tall, skinny, big boob, blonde. I mean, I think that's definitely not as, you know, prevalent as we are told it is.
Oh, it absolutely is. And actually, in the sex industry, one of the things I was talking about before you joined us was, you know, that I worked as an escort from 89 to 2004, and it was a real eye-opener for me because I learned that the women who work as escorts, it's tremendous diversity in age, size, shape, race, appearance, hair color, just so much diversity. And of course, that spoke volumes about men who would want to spend time with them. But a tremendous amount of diversity with men, too, about what appeals to them.
And I also, you know, I think it's interesting because this also comes up a lot in the book where, you know, the female character is dealing with whatever her body image issue is, including runner's calves, which is the first story by Summer Marsden, and they're feeling, concerned or bad, shameful about some part of their body. And as much as I just said that I don't think you should rely only on what someone else is thinking, sometimes having someone else say to you, you know, this isn't how everyone thinks, it is an eye-opener. And I think in the book, obviously, it's geared towards erotica, but that could be a friend, or it could be a mentor, it could be, you know, it could be someone else. And I think sometimes it's just hearing it from the right person at the right time that makes something click and say, oh, I don't necessarily, you know, what's in my head is not necessarily the truth, you know. There's a really great blog called Eat the Damn Cake, by Kate Fridkiss, and she talks about body image from various viewpoints, and it's very much a body positive blog, but that doesn't mean she doesn't have, you know, days where she'll say, oh, and then, you know, I hated this one part of my body, and instead of trying to shut down that voice, she'll say, okay, I'm going to grapple with that. What does that mean, and why do I not like it this day, but I liked it yesterday?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you mentioned this at the beginning, too, about the idea that our moods and our feelings about our bodies shift from day to day. Now, I had brought up the whole fact that our bodies are actually morphing from day to day sometimes.
Sometimes in ways that we don't know, you know, why. You know, I think it's interesting. Like, sometimes I do the exact same thing, where I'm like, well, how did I suddenly, why do I feel like I gained 5 pounds? And I know, I don't know if I did because I didn't weigh myself, but I just feel off. And sometimes it's not even a weight thing. It's just, you just don't feel the way you want to feel. And sometimes you just have to deal with that and get through it and just find ways to emphasize, well, I don't like this today, but I do like this. So maybe I'll do my hair this way, or I'll do my makeup this way, or whatever it is.
Do you think that maybe sometimes it's really just the fact that we are so used to looking to the exterior in this culture for explanations for why we feel, and really it's an inside job. You know, you're probably not feeling good about yourself because you're not feeling good about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we definitely have an aversion to feeling bad about ourselves, and, like, we don't want to, and then when I say we, I include myself in this, we don't want to feel that way, so we'll look for a way to not feel bad. And I think sometimes, no matter how much you try to push those feelings away, they're going to come back eventually, so trying to just deal with them and feel them, and then see where they take you. You know, sometimes, well, I mean, you know, who knows? But I think you're right that we do often look to external solutions. And you know, we might be able to work on the outside, but if you don't also work on the inside, you know, ultimately you're not really solving that problem for yourself.
No, absolutely not. Now, the women in who've contributed to your anthology have taken a lot of that inside journey and actually shared that with your readers about how they may have been a little insecure or less than confident, and then they gain their confidence.
And I think it's interesting because another theme that I got was exhibitionism of some form or another, whether it's posing for photos or just sort of showing off your body, which I think I thought that was interesting because I just wasn't necessarily expecting that. And I think that can be helpful for a lot of people. I have a friend who does boudoir photography, and her clients are everyone from, you know, married women who want to give their husband a gift to women who just want to celebrate their bodies and, you know, indulge in this very, you know, very selfish in some ways form of exhibitionism where they just get to dress up and someone tells them they're beautiful and then they get these photos of them looking their best. And I think that's wonderful. But I also don't think that's necessarily, you know, what's going to be the thing that works for everyone. My one fear is that with a book like this, that people are going to say, well, these are the only ways that women, you know, can grapple with the tension between body image and sexuality. And I think, you know, I hope that it does make women feel better about their bodies, but I think because it's erotica, really the first thing I want it to do is to entertain people and turn people on. And then secondarily, make them think a little bit.
Yeah.
And hopefully do both at the same time. You know, I think with a collection like this, hopefully it's one that people, you know, read and then reread and, you know, keep around. Because I certainly have favorite stories from when I started reading erotica back in probably 1999 that I'll take them out sometimes and I'll remember the vague outline of them but not all the details, and I'll reread them and I'll remember both reading them for the first time and being just kind of blown away, and then I'll get something new out of them. And I think these are the kinds of stories that you can do that with.
Yeah, you know, a lot of women use erotica different ways. What are some of the ways that you'd recommend this book be used? Would you suggest reading it to your lover or having your lover read it to you?
I think that is definitely one way if you feel comfortable. And, you know, it can also be a way of just, you know, enjoying your own body, like masturbation with reading erotica. That's something definitely that's one way I use it. And I think the nice thing about an anthology is that you can skip around. You know, you can go to the one, maybe the title that most intrigues you, or you can read them straight through. And I think it can be sexy to either read with someone else or, you know, say you read it and you're like, that one really spoke to me. That's something that I have always thought about, or that just said something in a way that I wouldn't necessarily say it, but that I agree with. You can give it to your partner to read on their own, and then maybe read it together or talk about it or, you know, or share it in some other way. Because I think some people enjoy reading with each other or to each other, but sometimes that can be kind of intense. So I think there's other ways you can share it and then mutually enjoy it too. You know, whether it's passing it back and forth to each other or each looking at it and saying, like, pick your favorite.
And is this also a book where they say, like, one-handed reading?
I think it is. You know, it's funny because there's both. Like, definitely I always want a story, you know, with characters who have more going on than just their sex life. But it is dirty and it is erotic and, you know, it's not like, it doesn't gloss over the sex. So I think when you get into the heart of the story, yes, it can definitely be a one-handed read. And some of them are more intense than others. You know, my story, Big Girls Do Cry, it's about spanking. So, you know, some people might be into that, some people might not be into it. And I know that not every every story is necessarily going to be for everyone. But what I like about editing anthologies is that I can include a range of writing, from the more lighthearted to the more kinky. And I also think that sometimes people, especially with erotica, they surprise themselves. Like, they might think, oh, I would never like that. But then once they start reading, they get sucked into the story, and they find that they like something that they, you know, wouldn't have predicted that they would like. And that happens to me as an editor. Sometimes I start reading something, and I'm not really sure if I'm going to like it or if it's going to work, and then something happens in the middle or at the end where I'm just blown away.
Yeah, you know, I also mentioned your blog spot with, what is it, Cupcakes Take the Cake?
Oh, yeah.
So, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that is my G-rated cupcake blog, but it does kind of tie into this topic, and I've been doing it for over 7 years, and I travel all over and eat cupcakes wherever I am, and I post about cupcakes literally all over the world, and people send me photos of everything from, you know, Muppets cupcakes to Twilight cupcakes. I'm sure we're going to see a lot of Obama cupcakes, because there were a lot of Obama cupcakes during the last election.
Oh, and interesting.
It's pretty amazing. Like, you can put anything on a cupcake, and people do. People have put meat on cupcakes. I've gotten custom cupcakes with a photo of my face on them, which is kind of weird because they were delicious. But I was doing a reading, and I ordered these photo cupcakes, so people were basically eating my face on a cupcake.
Eating your face instead of sitting on it, huh?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a fun, you know, for me, I love what I do. I love writing about sex, and I love writing erotica, but I don't always want to talk about that if I'm, you know, on the subway or something. But if I meet someone and they ask me what I do and I don't want to talk about that, and I say, oh, I'm a writer, I might say, oh, I write about cupcakes, and usually they'll tell me what their favorites are, which ones they don't like, or why they like this one and not that one. And you might think it would get boring to talk about cupcakes pretty much every day, but it doesn't get boring.
And I'm assuming this is a favorite food.
Do you have a favorite? Do you like cupcakes?
You know, I actually have extensive food allergies. Probably my favorite food is pizza, but I haven't had any for about 20 years. So, yeah. Yeah. Favorite foods now, I've actually kind of into health food. So fresh fruits and vegetables, kind of my mainstay.
I like this too. And I like incorporating food. You know, it's funny, I sometimes teach erotic writing classes, and one of the exercises I have people do is to write about a food. And some people write about traditional aphrodisiacs, but some people will just write about sort of a crazy food, you know, something you wouldn't necessarily think is sexy. And those are always things that I find entertaining, when someone takes something unexpected and turns it into erotica. And I love doing that with my writing, because I've been doing
Talking about eating while having sex,
or you know, as foreplay. Actually, one of my favorite stories that I've ever written, and one that people really remember and responded to, it was sort of tangentially related to eating. It was about doing the dishes. It's actually called Doing the Dishes, and it was about being turned on while washing someone else's dishes. And actually, it was inspired by a real person who I was seeing them, and I was at their apartment, and there were so many dishes piled up all over that there were no clean ones. So when they left to go to work, I was there hanging out, and I couldn't look at all the dirty dishes anymore. So I washed all of them, and then I left. So when he came home, the dishes were away, and he was kind of confused. Like, did Rachel wash my dishes?
And that was erotic for you or for him?
Well, I don't know if it was erotic for him, but I found it, I would say, more sensual than erotic, but it is very intimate because those are dishes that someone cooked, you know, cooked food and put on a plate and ate off of, and the fork was in their mouth. And I think there is something that can be sensual about it. But I also think that one thing I've learned over so many erotica stories is that you can write erotica about pretty much anything if you care about it. You can turn even a really boring setting, like sitting in traffic or something, into a story if you just use your imagination. And I think that's really cool when people either take a otherwise, you know, mundane situation and turn it into something sexy, or they use special knowledge that they have. You know, I used to play chess, so I once wrote a story about playing chess. Not because I necessarily think playing chess is sexy, but I thought it was an interesting dynamic where you're sitting across from someone and watching them, and they're watching you, and you can really use all your senses and just sort of, I think it can make you look around at the world in a different way. If you start thinking, could I write an erotica story about this? Could I write about this? And that's kind of how I go about my day. I mean, I'm not always on the lookout for stuff, but sometimes when something happens, I know I have to write about that because it's just too crazy.
That's probably something that's fun to Twitter about, too. I know that I've never really paired food and sex. I really didn't. I know a lot of people do. They, you know, maybe I tried the whipped cream thing. That was about it. But I have found that it can be quite sexy to while you're making love, to actually feed each other.
I don't know if I've ever done that. I've done it right before.
Yeah,
but I definitely think they're very closely connected because...
Well, if you, you know, it's kind of like if you're receiving pleasure while you're eating a favorite delicacy.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, you asked me if I had a favorite food. One of the things I love is goat brie with dates.
Okay, that sounds really good. I don't know if I've ever had that, but I love brie, so I don't see how I could not like that. Well, I'm dating. There's more.
There are sensuous foods. There really are some foods that are incredibly sensuous. And if you happen to be, biting into that while your lover is providing you with some sort of sensual delight, it can be pretty hot.
I like that. I'm actually dating someone right now who cooks, and I don't cook, and so it's wonderful. And he really enjoys it. And then I think there's like a feedback loop because I enjoy watching him cook because he's really into it and, you know, thinks about what I would like and what he would like and how everything goes together. So I think food preparation and just, you know, planning, it can be arduous, but it can also be sensual. So I think trying to find ways to make it more fun and more sexy are good things.
So I'm looking at the clock. Our time together has just flown by, and I want to thank you so much for joining us. But before we go, I'd love to give you an opportunity to tell the listeners how they can get a copy of your book and maybe mention the titles of some of your other books.
You can find out more about Curvy Girls at curvygirlsbook.com. I also have everything from Bottoms Up, which is about spanking, to Best Bondage Erotica 2012, and a brand new book called Going Down, Oral Sex Stories, which ties into what we were just talking about. So, there's kind of something for everyone. So you can go to my website, rachelkramerbussell.com, and find out about all of them.
And you're on tour right now. Where are you headed next? You're in San Francisco today.
I'm
where are you
in San
going?
Francisco now. I'm going to Santa Cruz with Susie Bright on Thursday, April 12th, and Berkeley, which is where I still live, at Good Vibrations on Friday the 13th, and then I'm in New York April 25th at Housing Works. So if you know anyone
New York,
in New York,
where you're,
send them
and New York's where you're currently based, right?
Yes. Yeah.
podcast. Fabulous.
Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun, and it made me hungry.
Oh, yes. You know what? You made me hungry, too. Or horny and hungry. I'm not entirely sure. Rachel, congratulations on the new book. Congratulations on getting all the mainstream press. I was really impressed to find you in the
USA Today. Thank you. 50 Shades of Grey has really brought out people wanting to talk about erotica, which I think is a good thing. And, you know, I'm curious to see what happens next with that phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, continued success to you. And we'll have you back here when the next book comes out. You're very prolific, so I'm sure that won't be long.
Thank you so much.
All right.
This was a lot of fun.
Rachel Kramer Bussell, and this is Veronica Monet signing off from the Shame-Free Zone. We'll see you here again next Monday night at 9.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?